Another television, film, and stage actor left this world unexpectedly, and we're going to pay tribute to her and her most noteworthy work on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by California Closets of Syracuse, creating custom storage solutions for all areas of the home, as well as in professional offices and commercial spaces. Learn more at californiaclosets.com or by visiting their DeWitt showroom.
Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. Janet Dubois, best known for her supporting character Winona Woods on the 70s hit black sitcom Good Times, died at the age of 74 on February 17th. She carved out an enviable body of work considering the barriers to entry for black actors in the entertainment industry during her peak years. Her early television acting credits include the 1969 television movie JT and long-running television soap opera Love of Life, on which her 1970 to 72 role as Loretta Allen made her the first African-American female as a regular cast member on a daytime serial. In 1970, Dubois appeared in her first film playing Vera in Diary of a Mad Housewife, and then television producer Norman Lear saw Dubois in Lanford Wilson's play The Hot L Baltimore, which led to her being cast as Winona Woods, Florida Evans' best friend and neighbor in the CBS series Good Times.
Well, Florida, you know I know how James has been acting around here lately, so I brought you something to lift his spirits. Imported directly from California, Cabernet Sauvignon, 1969. That's the year the smog didn't kill the grapes.
How come it's in a muscatel bottle?
I switched. I said I wanted to lift his spirits, not shock his system.
Joining me to pay tribute to Dubois and to discuss some of the great sitcoms that featured African-American ensembles on this Black History Month episode of Pop Life is the original guest of Pop Life and our original expert, Bob Thompson, founding director of the Blair Center for Television and Popular Culture and trustee professor of radio, television, and film at Syracuse University. Welcome back, Bob.
Good to be back again. And oh boy, a 69 Cabernet sounds pretty good right now.
Yeah. In a Muscatel bottle. She had pretty good comedic timing, don't you think? A lot of times typecast into that sort of sassy black woman role, but she played it well.
Yeah, she could walk into a room, deliver a line, and walk out and completely take the audience along with her. She really did have an extraordinary sense of timing, and it worked really well in this kind of show that the Jeffersons was. By the way, you mentioned Love of Life. That was a pretty important role that she had on there. We had Cicely Tyson, of course, had been on East Side, West Side a few years before that, But appearing on that soap opera for a couple of seasons was a big deal. And nobody's heard of Love of Life anymore, but that show was on from 1951 to 1980. That was one of the legacy soap operas.
Yeah. Not one that I was able to catch, but doing some research on this, I could see where that was a pretty good trend-setting role back in that day, especially for daytime serials that played mostly to I think to white housewives. So having her on there, I think, was an important role in setting up how black folks would have access to television series in the future. She did some really good, some really cool things. One of the things that I think is least known about Janet Dubois is that she had an amazing voice and was a vocalist. She sang the theme song for the Jeffersons, which we'll talk about in a little while.
Yeah, she not only sang it, she co-wrote it.
Co-wrote it, sang it. So she was a pretty cool performer. She had an album. I think she produced an album. She also co-starred in films. So she wasn't limited to television. She was in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker,
yeah,
back in 1988, which was she played the mother of one of the lead characters. Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle in 2003. She was also in other television series like Moesha, The Steve Harvey Show, A Different World, and The Wayans Brothers. And I found that folks who were doing that kind of work, those sitcoms, people like The Wayans Brothers and others, there seemed to be a great deal of respect for who she was and what she could bring to the table. And almost it seemed like it was intentional that they made her a part of a lot of these projects.
Yeah, I think it was. And that respect was well deserved. That we do think of her as, you know, this kind of gossip on the Jefferson and these goofy kinds of roles. But she was a, you know, she was a serious actor, and she played, did some serious roles on theater. She, you know, was alongside Louis Gossett Jr. Mm-hmm. in plays like, what was it, Raisin in the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
She worked on that play that not only did Maya Angelou write, but she directed it as well. I'm forgetting the And I Still Rise.
And I Still Rise, yeah, with Clifton Davis.
Clifton Davis, right. So she was, we sometimes, I think most of us associate her with the very, very big roles and roles we still see in syndication on these 70s sitcoms. But she was not only a serious singer, she was a very serious actress as well.
Yeah, we're gonna miss her. I mean, I think she was a great character actress, a talented singer. And her death just brought this tremendous sense of nostalgia to me. I grew up watching her on shows like Good Times. You know, so when Good Times was out, I was in elementary into middle school. And many times, especially, you know, given a time where we only had about two or three television channels, those were the only black folks I got to see on TV. So I want to jump into, on this Black History Month episode of Pop Life, into some of those classic black sitcoms, like the one that she appeared on, Good Times, which went on for six seasons on CBS, featured Florida and James Evans and their three children who lived in Chicago in a high-rise housing project in a poor black neighborhood. It had no name, but I think at the time, most people thought it was a representation of the notorious Cabrini-Green projects.
Right, which they ultimately had to tear down. It was so bad. Yeah.
And they had their two sons and daughter, J.J., Michael, and Thelma. They were 17, 16, and 11, respectively, J.J. being the eldest son, Michael being the youngest child at 11, and Thelma 16. And then Wilona Woods, their exuberant neighbor and Florida's best friend, who was played by Janet Dubois. She was a divorcee who worked in a boutique. This was a hilarious show, but not without its internal turmoil.
Yeah, internal, and a lot of controversy about all kinds of things as well. And, you know, when you just said the character was divorced, which now, of course, we don't think anything about that. This show starts in 1974. That was still a comparatively new thing.
Mm-hmm.
One Day at a Time was about to come out. But even back 4 years ago, when Mary Tyler Moore came out in 1970, she was created as a recently divorced character, and CBS would not let her be divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we forget that as recently as 1974, when Good Times was starting, the very fact that she played a divorced character was still something of a big deal.
Yeah. This show was about the struggles of a black family trying to make it financially, trying to make it through hardship, and I guess celebrating the good times. It was a comedy, but boy, it dealt with some pretty heavy themes like gang violence and gang recruiting. I remember that being, as I'm growing up inner city Baltimore and very concerned about gangs and gang life, that was one of the more real episodes to me when they were trying to recruit JJ and force him to be a part of a gang. I found that to be pretty scary, especially for a show that's a comedy. They also dealt with themes of drug abuse and drug use, obviously poverty. So it was a comedy, but a lot of really heavy themes.
Right, and especially in the early years before the show began to mutate into other places. This, of course, was created by Eric Monte and Mike Evans, who had played Lionel
mm-hmm.
over on the Jeffersons. Eric Monte would go on to do Cooley High, of course, which then What's Happening, another TV series, would
mm-hmm.
be based on. So Norman Lear gets the credit for Good Times often, but Eric Monte was really the heart behind it. And you're right, I remember that recruiting episode very, very well. I was older than you when I watched it, but I remember that very, very well also. However, what happened to that show, it was troublesome to a lot of people, including those that were on it. First of all, there's a real ironic titling of it. To title something that takes place in Cabrini-Green Good Times has really got to stretch it. But that was done, I think, in a very sincere way that even with all of these problems, the family still loved each other, and that came through very well. The biggest controversy, of course, that came out of this was the thing that many people thought that the network was making it so successful, and that was the breakout of Jimmy Walker's starring role as JJ. And you can sum up some of the biggest controversy in one word: dynamite.
Right. Well, you know, and you can see how easily that could happen. Now, I was a kid watching this show. He was obviously my favorite character and a lot of other kids' favorite character because he was extremely loud and flamboyant. I had the JJ hat, so the hat that he wore a lot. They started selling that, and when you flipped up the front brim, it said dynamite
on
it.
I didn't have one, however.
I walked around for days with that. But that character and that catchphrase, that very popular, probably in the top, what, maybe three all-time in television catchphrases?
It's way up there, yeah.
That took over the show, much to the chagrin of the other leading actors like John Amos. And the issue is the fact that this character, JJ, so you had another son who strived to be one day a part of the Supreme Court, wanted to be a Supreme Court justice. And I think the daughter, Thelma, wanted to go on to medical school. But JJ was not bright, did not excel in school, just highly sexually driven, always about the women. And they didn't think that was such a great character to be the breakout character and to begin to focus all the writing on. So they began to make JJ a part of almost every single scene. And that became a problem for John Amos. Let's take a listen to what he had to say about this.
The differences we had on that show, and we had a number of differences, as evidenced by my early departure from the show, was I felt that with two other younger children, one of whom aspired to become a Supreme Court justice, that would be Ralph Carter or Michael. And the other, Bernadette Stennis, I think, she aspired to become a surgeon. And the differences I had with the producers of the show was that I felt too much emphasis was being put on JJ and his chicken hat and saying dynamite every third page.
Yeah, it that was a problem. You know, when you have black audiences that don't have images of themselves on television a lot, I can see how that can be a struggle for folks who are participating in that show.
Yes, and then it got worse, because how did they deal with the problems that John Amos is talking about? They killed off his character,
right.
John Amos's character. And this, my mentor, J. Fred McDonald, who wrote Blacks and White TV, the first book on African Americans on television, he went out oftentimes, he appeared in that TV Land documentary, saying that here you had this nuclear family. It was really a breakthrough in American television. They loved each other, all of this, and no sooner do you establish it than you kill off the dad, and you're, you know, right back where you started. Also, even JJ, I show an episode, matter of fact, I showed it last February in one of my screenings. JJ was an aspiring artist.
Right.
And
very talented,
episode,
too.
In fact, takes place during Black History Week. It was pre-1976, so it wasn't Black History Month yet. Mm-hmm. There was only a week. And JJ actually had some really potential depth to him that was simply blown out of the water by that dynamite. And, of course, the painting part was already sort of a part of that show with the that painting that was on the Marvin Gaye cover, Ernie Barnes' Sugar
mm-hmm.
Shack.
Right, right.
So that could have gone in other directions, but this is still a time that, you know, television is going after such a huge audience. And when you get a breakthrough character like that, it overwhelmed everything else that was going on in that show.
Yeah.
And even someone as powerful as Norman Lear couldn't stop it.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't reflective of reality. Now, I'm growing up single household, inner city Baltimore. Every man in my life had a job. You know, all of them, my uncles, my father, my grandfather, everyone worked. There wasn't a time that I remember that any man in my family, any black man in my family didn't work. And this was a show where James Evans just, you know, just could not find a job.
It's in the lyrics of the song. Yeah.
You know, he was doing things like working at a car wash you know, I think doing restaurant work or things like that. He just, you know, couldn't seem to catch a break. And that really grew on John Amos, as he would say later in other interviews. This also became a problem for Esther Rolle. We always hear about John Amos's pushback because it was a lot more controversial going up against Norman Lear. But Esther Rolle also decided to leave the show because the characters would not develop in a way that she could feel good about. And then in that last season, our friend Janet Dubois actually becomes the lead actress.
The star of the show? Yeah, wasn't that an interesting turn of events?
It certainly was. Great show. There were some one thing I loved about it, especially looking back now. Back then, I didn't know any better. But looking back on these shows now, just a long list of great actors that played guest appearances on there, like Lou Gossett Jr., Rosalind Cash, Gary Coleman, Ron Glass, who went on to star on Barney Miller, Carl Weathers, and dozens of others. Just a lot of great – the shows gave access and work to a lot of great actors.
It is. That is a long list. I'd forgotten about how many. And a lot of them we didn't know when we were seeing them on Good Times because they hadn't become who they would become.
Right.
We should also give a quick shout-out to Esther Rolle, even when she was still appearing in Maud, the show that Good Times spun off as Maud's housekeeper. The first episode in which Esther Rolle appears in Maud, very early in that series – is one of the most compelling shows that I have episodes I've ever seen, and it deals with the whole issue of the role of maid, which, of course, let's remember, these shows go back to Beulah, one of the first television shows, along with Amos and Andy, that were in a certain kind of genre. Beulah, by the way, starred three different Beulahs over the course of its very short season run. Ethel Waters, who was nominated for an Academy Award for was a Pinky, Hattie McDaniel, of course, who got an Academy Award for Gone with the Wind, and Louise Beavers finally took the role over in the end. And Esther Rolle as the housekeeper in Maud really did explore that idea of that stereotyped role in some very, very sophisticated ways.
Yeah. One other note that I didn't know, certainly would not have known if I didn't do a little research, is that Lawrence Fishburne almost played Michael.
Yeah.
And this is Michael. The actor playing Michael was in another production. Didn't know if he would have freedom to do this. I think maybe there was some negotiation going on. And Lawrence Fishburne almost played Michael on that show.
Yeah, that's an interesting what if. On the other hand, I think the person who did Michael did a perfectly a good job of it.
He did. I think the role of JJ was so big that it was tough for Jimmy Walker to get much other quality work after that. He was just way too typecast. Our next show I find to be the show that I will always crack up watching is The Jeffersons. It is still, to this day, one of the funniest things I think was ever produced. It aired on CBS from 1975 to 1985, 11 seasons, 253 episodes, and it used to be the longest-running sitcom with a primarily black cast, and then Tyler Perry's House of Pain overtook that. But that was quite an accomplishment.
But I think Jeffersons was still longer in number of seasons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
11
yeah.
seasons is a long time.
The show portrays a prosperous couple, George and Louise Jefferson, that many of us remember from All in the Family, and their move from Queens to Manhattan after the success of George's dry cleaning business. They also had this sassy housekeeper, Florence, played by Marla Gibbs.
What are you doing home so early?
I got a business appointment coming up here, an advertising guy.
Ooh, I wouldn't trust one of them.
Who asked you?
I wouldn't believe nothing them advertising folks say. especially in them commercials.
Look, you just get back to work. Advertising is good for business.
All I know is none of them detergents ever turned my hands soft and white.
Will you shut that damn thing off?
You told me to get back to work.
Do it someplace else.
I already did the someplace else.
You better get out.
Okay, whoever chose that clip needs to get a raise, because that really does nail what was at the heart of the brilliance of the Jeffersons. That line she delivers and the way she delivers it, I don't trust any of those advertising people, especially in them commercials.
Yeah.
That's such a beautiful line. She made that show. You know, what's interesting is she was to the Jeffersons very much what the J.J. character was to Good Times,
yeah.
But she didn't have a catchphrase, and she didn't do that kind of almost minstrel-like performance. She was a much better, I think, breakout character, and of course she went on to do her own various different series, at least the actor Marla Gibbs did.
Yeah, she was phenomenal. Sherman Hemsley, though, I think, was a comedic genius.
Oh, yeah.
His timing was just impeccable, and sometimes it wasn't perfect timing, it was the off timing that made it that much funnier. I mean, this man was just absolutely hilarious, and one of the characters, I think, even funnier than most, was Mother Jefferson. I mean,
Yes.
She was the perfect foil for Louise, the doting mother whose son could do no wrong, and Louise was always in the wrong. It just made for fantastic comedic programming. The show also ended with some controversy. Now, this was a successful show, right? I mean, it did well. In fact,
hugely successful.
It debuted at number 3 in its 8th season, number 3 on television. But they just ended this thing without, according to the actors, without even telling the actors. So they decided to cancel the show. And Isabel Sanford says that she learned of the cancellation through her cousin. I mean, that's not a way to treat a show with that long-running success. Right?
I'll say, unless your cousin is the head of the network.
Right. It just abruptly canceled without allowing for a proper series finale. So that was a thing that I think rubbed fans, certainly like me, the wrong way, was that, you know, we were used to, when a show was coming to an end, some kind of production that said goodbye. And this didn't have that.
You know, back when the Jeffersons ended, 85, no, you're right, by that time, final episodes, the Mary Tyler Moore Show in 77 was the thing that really got the final episode going. So you're right, by 85, there was at least some kind of acknowledgement, and especially with a show that had gone 11 seasons. No comedy had gone 11 seasons, or no sitcom had gone 11 seasons. I always thought CBS quit doing it because they didn't know how to do the 12 season of a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
They learned with Big Bang Theory, I guess.
Yeah. This is almost the direct opposite of Good Times, in that you have a very successful black man who is, you know, moving on up, as the song says. He has a successful dry cleaning business. They move from Queens to Manhattan. And the comedy comes really with him trying to still be himself, still trying to fit in with the more successful folks. His constant clashes with the interracial couple that becomes their very good friends. And of course, the constant clashing with a housekeeper. One of the funniest episodes is when they hired Marla Gibbs' character. They were interviewing another woman. Louise was friends with a housekeeper in the building.
Right.
Had her over and was talking to her. And then when she thought that George and Louise worked for the family.
Were the main butler, yeah.
That was hilarious. And George's reaction to that just had me rolling. You know, it's the kind of thing that I thought, I think a lot of folks dreamt about in terms of becoming successful and having other people work for them.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. There is an element of the Jeffersons, and I think it's one of the elements that really gives it its voltage. It's a revenge story. right from the opening song with that getting a piece of the pie. I mean, there is a sense that, and we see it developing with George Jefferson's relationship with Archie Bunker on All in the Family, which it was spun from.
Mm-hmm.
That whole idea of the Jeffersons takes that, and then George gets the piece of the pie, and the rest of the Jeffersons is he enjoys putting that pie in other people's faces who had deprived him of it before.
Absolutely, that's the perfect way to put it. I mean, he was constantly rubbing his success in other folks' faces.
And so enjoying it.
Yeah.
And he could do that. Sherman Hemsley could do that. Like, no, I can't think of anybody who could have done that with the almost evil glee that he managed
it. Another favorite is Sanford and Son. A sitcom television series that ran on NBC Television Network from January 14, 1972 until 1977. And it was actually, I didn't know this, it was based on a BBC television program called Steptoe and Son.
Right.
Which had its original broadcast run in Britain from 1962 to 65. Were you familiar with that show?
I was. I'll come on over and show you a couple of episodes. By the way, Red Fox's real last name is Sanford. That's where they got that.
Oh, really?
From Steptoe, if I'm not mistaken. That show was really interesting on so many different levels. First of all, Red Fox, who, of course, anybody in the African-American community for decades before that would have known Red Fox. He was a superstar who essentially did very off-color, well, that's a bad choice of words, let's face it, dirty records.
Yeah.
They were the kinds that when you'd come down as a kid after you were supposed to be in bed, your parents would be listening to.
Oh, yeah, we would play Hooky from School. And play Red Fox and Richard Pryor records.
There
all day
you go.
Long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he was already a big presence in the entertainment industry, and he employed and brought back a lot of people who had worked on the old Amos and Andy show.
Oh, wow.
One of the very first sitcoms. Well, actually, one of the very first sitcoms back in radio days. So that show was very much based in a long tradition of black comedy, black actors, Red Fox's whole history in what used to be called the Chitlin Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So that came with a lot of tradition on it. There were people who complained that, you know, why does it have to be set in a junkyard and all of that, which, you know, were the arguments being made because there were only a very few number of shows that had African-American casts. Mm-hmm. They had to stand for an awful lot of stuff.
Well, you have this interesting mix of Jefferson's success, black man running his own business, and Good Times, where it's a bit of a struggle living in inner city in ghetto. This took place in Watts in Los Angeles. So you mix those two together, and you have a black man who runs his own business. It just happens to be a salvage business. But he calls his own shots. He makes his own day.
He
makes his own money. And I think it makes for a very interesting way to introduce situations and other characters.
And his set pieces were, you know, whenever he'd get upset, he'd have his fake heart attack and talk to his wife in heaven. I'm coming, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
His drawer full of reading glasses that had about 60 of them. I mean, he had those go-to kinds of things that could deliver every time. And Red Fox just doing a kind of like Jack Betty used to do, by not saying anything, he mm-hmm. could be absolutely hysterical.
God, yeah, his physical comedy was hilarious.
An episode where he and Lionel and his friend wanted to make some extra money, and they found that there was this film producer making movies. And Fred wants to be a movie star too, so they all go down there, and it turns out it's a porno operation. And he does, Red Fox must do like 7 minutes of just absolute genius comedy in that.
Yeah. So this was a ratings hit throughout its sixth season run. A lot of the conflict between Fred was with between him and his sister-in-law, Esther.
Right.
You were a deadbeat the day my sister married you. and you still a deadbeat today. Listen, Esther, now you know good and well the day I married your sister, I was loaded.
Yeah, you was loaded all right. You were so drunk you fell on the preacher.
But I had to get drunk to look at your ugly family.
You talk about my family.
I'll talk about your family. Listen, for years, people going around saying, black is beautiful. They took one look at your family and said, hold everything.
Cantankerous is the adjective, I think, best describes that character. And he was a bit of a bigot. And this was the answer to CBS's All in the Family. So this was the black bigot to All in the Family's white bigot.
Right, and so was George Jefferson, of course.
Yeah.
That was always the kind of gimmick, was that George was, in fact, a mirror of Archie.
Yeah, and like you effectively pointed out with the Jeffersons, this very much was like revenge comedy, too. This was all about Fred Sanford getting revenge as well. I think this was another one of my favorite shows. One of the things I loved about television back then is there was seemed to be a lot of thought put into theme songs, and this one had a great one produced by Quincy Jones.
Quincy Jones, right?
Yeah. So it's one of those things you'll hear that you will immediately know after the first few bars what that song is. And this show also had a lot of great characters. We just heard from Aunt Esther, but it had his buddies Bubba and Grady, which were two fantastic characters, and then his son Lamont's friend Rolo, who had a recurring role. This was really cool stuff and gave I think America a little taste of what life was like in a different part of the country, in California. A lot of things took place in New York City. We saw Chicago in Good Times, and this gave us a little bit of Watts.
That is a very good point about that. And you're right also, of all of Fred's old friends, those were people with lots and lots of comic experience that he kind of brought back into employment. And the theme song, I always thought that the way that whole thing starts, it was almost as if the theme from Shaft had fallen asleep and woken up in Fred's junkyard. That's how it would have sounded.
These were three great shows, and there were others back then, but these shows, I think, led to doors being opened for other shows once we get into the 80s and 90s. Shows like The Cosby Show and their spinoffs, Different World. Do you agree with that?
I do. And, of course, we always have to now preface this, but The Cosby Show did what it did absolutely brilliantly. And it very much, you're right, it took the foundations of these 70s programs, but completely changed their whole. Now, all of a sudden, you've got not only George Jefferson, but you've got a doctor and a lawyer in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And A Different World, even though that was never able to kind of get to the comedic, exquisite level of its parent. For a people of a certain age, that show was very, very important to them.
Yeah, it was one of those shows we watched from beginning to end, from the first episode to the last. Some great characters, great actors on there who are doing well today. Other shows during
that. Before we get too excited about that part, what was also going on in the 1980s was the 1-2 punch of Different Strokes and Webster,
right,
which we would need a lot longer to talk about the many issues we could discuss about that.
And we should one day. We really should. Yeah, though I had problems with those shows.
Even Give Me a Break.
Yeah, Even Give Me a Break.
Yeah.
And then these led into some of the shows in the 90s, like the Martin Lawrence Show, which in its first few seasons, we absolutely could not miss. We didn't have...
That was a great show.
Didn't have DVRs back then, so we were setting a VHS player to record if we couldn't be home. But there were a lot of great comedy shows out there.
In Living Color, Sister, Sister. The new networks, first Fox, then UPN, when they were trying to get launched, they would always go after the underserved black audience,
mm-hmm,
until they got established, and then they'd cancel all the shows and
right,
go to the more what was then called mainstream stuff.
And what's funny is that we had a lot of these great shows, but the audiences were getting a little tired of being fed buffoonery. And we began to complain that there weren't enough black dramas or dramas that featured prominent black actors in them. So, you know, that helped get folks on, get a lot of folks some work. But at some point, audiences began to say, look, we need more. We need more depth with our entertainment.
Hey, let's do another Pop Life on black dramas, because that is a fascinating and very bumpy story.
You hear that? We're setting that up. I got you on record, Bob. Look, question. Is there a role, a place for the nostalgic productions that that they're doing with these Norman Lear live shows? How is that being received? So we've seen a couple of episodes of All in the Family produced with Woody Harrelson as Archie Bunker. We've seen an episode of The Jeffersons, and now we've seen an episode of Good Times. Is this simply a tribute to Norman Lear, or is there a real appetite for going back to not only live stage productions, but those kinds of comedies?
I think there's a lot of reasons for doing that. I think part of it was Jimmy Kimmel is very nostalgic about that stuff. He's a big fan of Norman Lear, and he helped make that happen. It is delightful to see a 97-year-old man still co-hosting these shows that he helped create. But I do think, and they've been very careful about the episodes they've chosen, and I think in many ways these live things, the first one got spectacularly huge ratings, the second one considerably lower, but still good ratings by the standards of network television today. I think the idea of introducing those shows through the Trojan horse of this highly promoted live kind of thing might get people my students' age to actually go back and look at some of them and see how this, what these foundations were that have led to the things that they're watching now. A year ago, I was teaching All in the Family in my history of television class, which had about 120 people in it. And I asked for a show of hands, and not one person out of 120 had seen an episode of All in the Family straight through.
Wow.
The most influential entertainment TV show in the history of American television, I would contend. I think, if nothing else, those live things gave a nostalgic punch to people like me and to you, but they also might have had an almost educational quality to others. And as we've been discussing, it's not like these Norman Lear shows were without their faults. It's not like there weren't problems that we now see as we're looking back. But I think all of that in its entirety is important to look at. They are an important part of our cultural history. And if it takes Jimmy Kimmel to bring them back, I say go for it.
Yeah. I've watched them. I've enjoyed most of them. I didn't really care for the stand-up comedian, former Saturday Night Live cast member who played JJ in the Good Times one. I thought he was way over the top with trying to. It was almost a character.
Which you got to be very careful with that character.
Yeah,
I really agree with you there.
Especially Harrelson as
Archie Bunker, I thought was a brilliant choice. I think he's terrible.
Yeah,
but that's another story.
I think he tries to sound like Archie a little too much.
I think you're absolutely right.
I think I would prefer to see a rounder person.
Oh, very good point. Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
When you're playing to this audience, you know, we have certain expectations of that show. Maybe to folks who aren't familiar with it, it came across fresher. So where are we today, Bob? What shows out there are being produced that are about or feature large ensembles of black folks that are worth watching?
Well, I think if we want to show what is directly the descendants of the evolution from Good Times, Sanford and Son, What's Happening, The Jeffersons, to The Cosby Show, to today, that would be the very old school sitcom Blackish. which if you just stumble onto it, it just looks like another goofy sitcom with people laughing. But that show has done some absolutely extraordinary things. The episode they did on spanking, the episode they did on police shootings, the episode they did on the election of the current president, the episode they did on the N-word. Mm-hmm. I mean, one right after the other, done in these very network television, user-friendly kinds of ways. That's an extraordinary show. And then the greatest show to come out in a long, long time, Atlanta, if you even call that a comedy. It's a half hour, but it's, depending on which week you watch, it's a comedy, it's a feature, it's a drama, it's a musical, it's something different every time you watch it, and it's always brilliant.
And I think that's what makes it a success. It doesn't have this predictable formula that you're going to sit down and immediately know what's going to happen in that episode. So each episode is almost like opening a new gift.
That's exactly it. And sometimes you don't know what's going on even when you're watching it. Freddie Perkins comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a fantastic show. You had been suggesting I watch Blackish for quite a while, and I did watch a couple of episodes, and I found it to be very funny. It's a hilarious show, and you're right. They deal with, in a comedic way, with some great subject matter.
And it's, of course, had two spinoffs. It had Grownish, which takes the daughter off, very much like A Different World did, to college, and now Mixed-ish, which has had Mixed-ish reviews as well, which is a relatively new a spinoff. So that's kind of like the Norman Lear universe has now got three shows in its franchise.
Yeah. Anything else?
The Carmichael Show, which didn't get nearly the attention of either of the two that I mentioned, but if that show did nothing else but one single episode, it'd be worth remarking upon. There's an episode where Gerard is he's a comedian, and of course he really is admires the work of Bill Cosby. He grew up as many comedians did, influenced by Cosby. Anyway, it's now the modern day, and he gets tickets to see a performance of Cosby, who, as you know, was still performing until mm-hmm. he went to jail.
Right.
So he brings them home. He's all excited, and he offers them to his girlfriend, which, of course, is a really bad idea. So she doesn't want to go. She screams at him for it. So he takes his dad. And the greatest scene is they're right near the place where he's going to perform, and Gerard says, "Oh, there's a parking place." And the dad says, $7.50 for parking. That's outrageous. And Gerard says in this deadpan way, "Dad, we're going to see Cosby, and you're going to draw the line at how much the parking costs?" And it really got into that whole issue that you and I have talked about, is what do you do with Cosby,
right,
who did so much important stuff after all this other stuff comes out? You can't erase it, but at the same time, anyway, the whole episode is about that very thing.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and watch that one. This was great.
You're
conversation.
You're going to have to come over sometime. I'll drag out my tapes, and we'll just go from about Monday till Thursday.
I'm going to come sit in on your class, too.
Anytime.
Thanks, Bob. This was a great conversation. Lots of good history here in terms of television. We're saying goodbye to Janet Dubois, but also celebrating many of the great comedies that featured black actors from the 70s, 80s, and into today. So thank you for helping us to remember this stuff and suggesting that we discover some new shows as well.
I can't wait for our next conversation.
Thank you, sir. That's going to do it for another episode of Pop Life. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. Pop Life is a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow the show wherever you get your podcast and rate it. It does help us reach other listeners. Until next time, I'm Joe Lee.